He said, let me tell you something, Mr. Nestor. What is that, Mr. Brand? He said, this is going to be your problem. I said, what do you mean going to be my problem? He said, because I'm going to retire, and I'm not going to fool with this immigration stuff. And he did just that. I said, okay, Mr. Brand, you can retire. Somebody else will take the job and move it on.
Welcome to A Pixie from Kilmarnock, a program about the people, places, and history of the Northern Neck. I'm your host, Pixie E. Curry. It takes a village. We have all heard that African proverb. The village consists of the spiritual leader, the nurturer, the teacher, the ones who led young people through their rites of passage as they left behind the way of thinking as a child onto the path of becoming an adult. The segregated Northern Neck Village's heartbeat radiated from the black schools. The schools and the teachers kept dreams and aspirations alive. This in spite of the crushing racism that all the black adults face every day, and that we as children brushed up against, despite the adults trying to shield us from the exposure, like poison ivy. Parents and teachers knew that in the world of now, it couldn't be changed unless their children were cared for and taught by everyone that lived in that village. And we, the children, listened to their instructions and kept them safe in our hearts and in our souls. This will be an extended interview, one of the principal and the other a warrior, trying to preserve those places of black education. I interviewed Dr. Elton Smith in April 2021. He is part of that breed of educators who knew your parents, your grandparents, your aunts, your uncles, and will let you know it. He demanded excellence from his charges because he knew that his responsibility was to ensure the village that all resources, all efforts, all challenges were to be used to mold the students under his charge to be prepared to meet a world that said they will only get so far. His vision for his students was there were no boundaries. If we wanted it, we would achieve it, that we would have the tools to do so. I would like to introduce you to the principal, Dr. Elton Smith. Dr. Smith, you are a highly regarded gentleman, educator, activist.
Thank you.
A friend to many, many people on the Northern Neck.
Right.
There are so many young people, and we're not so young anymore, but I'm going to call us young, that want to hear about you.
Right.
So I'm going to start off with, first of all, a little bit of your background. Do you mind?
Just, not at all.
All right. Start telling us a little bit about you.
Okay. I'm a native. Dr. Elton Smith Jr. is a native of Lancaster County, Virginia, currently residing in King and Queen County, a graduate of A.T. Wright High School, and received a B.A. degree in sociology education from Virginia Union University. Received a master's degree in school administration from Hampton University, and has done graduate work studies in school administration at the College of William and Mary. He was awarded the honorary doctorate of pedagogy in education in 2003 from Virginia University of Lynchburg. He was a professor and curriculum advisor for the university at Burgess. That's the teaching site of Virginia University of Lynchburg. His education experience includes classroom teacher, elementary school principal, middle school principal, high school principal, and assistant school superintendent. In 1973, he was appointed the first black superintendent of schools in the state of Virginia. His past president of the Northern Neck Diggers Union, former member of the Northern Neck Free Health Clinic, was a member of the area board of directors, a member of Phi Delta Kappa, life member of the Virginia State Parent Teachers Association, and past member of the Virginia for the Arts Humanities Board. A member of Mount Vernon Baptist Church, Whitestone, served on the trustee board, Diggins Ministry, Men's Course, and formerly Sunday school teacher and superintendent, served as church finance officer for many years. I was in the Palestine Lodge number 100. I became a member of the Shriners, that was in Richmond, the Shriners and the 33rd degree Mason. I've gone all the way up the ladder in the line of Mason and some other organizations too.
What year were you born?
1926, September the 8th, 1926. Anything else you want?
That's it. Well, so here I go. I'm piggybacking on some of that information. The school that you mentioned, A.T. Wright, which...
Named after Albert Terry Wright.
Was that the only school that was open for the people that lived in the Lancaster County?
That was the only high school during those early days. It had several elementary schools. There was Mount Jean's, not something enough. But there was Morgan E. North, Mirror Point, school in Mirror Point, several elementary schools. But A.T. Wright was the only high school for blacks to the elementary.
Being in a segregated school, what was the level of education that you received? What were the teachers like? And also the fact that there was segregation, what were the obstacles that you all had to face going
through?
Well,
first of all, in the curriculum, I'll deal with that first. In the curriculum area, we did not come to the black school. Now, we did not have everything that was offered at the white school. For example, in high school, I know we didn't have physics at the time when I was in elementary school. There was some curriculum, I put it this way, some curriculum offerings at the white school that were not at the black school. We did not have all of the necessities, shall I say, for education in a black school. I recall when I went to Brookvale, that was Brookvale Elementary at that time, and we didn't have a gym or anything. And I worked with a friend of mine who was at the Board of Education there in D.C., the Board of Education. And I was telling him about our situation, and he said, well, what you do, I said, Brookvale, let me back up off that. This was at King and Queen. He said, we didn't have a vocational ag building. And so he sent me the papers, and we worked out plans for vocational ag at Brookvale. And that's when we got our first, agriculture and home economics up there, but we didn't have the space. So that was when we got the space for that area, the vocational building. Mm-hmm.
My great aunt, Viola Taylor, she was a home economics teacher.
Yeah, that was at Brookvale.
Yeah, at Brookvale, yes. Uh-huh. You had to go roundabout just to get some of the facilities so that they...
Had to go roundabout to try to get funds. Because the county did not provide all the funds for the things that we need. You mentioned VW. Ms. Taylor, I know we had a home economic area, and we had most of the equipment, but we didn't have a dryer. And the superintendent was Brand, R.E. Brand. And
oh, I remember Mr. Brand.
He came by and went down and looked. We were looking at the home economics department. And Ms. Taylor told him, he said, now, you know what? If I had a dryer for this apartment, it would be fine. It would be complete. And Brian looked at her and said, "Miss Taylor," he said, "the sun comes up every morning at 6 o'clock."
Okay, conserving energy is what he was saying.
He was saying that they didn't have no money.
I know.
Dryer.
That's funny. I want to talk about Dr. Morgan E. Norris with you because he helped to build a school for the black kids.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Norris was it. Look, Dr. Norris and Dr. Chamberlain, you don't hear that much about, we didn't hear that much about Dr. Chamberlain. Dr. D. Daniel, D.H. Chamberlain, who was the minister at New St. John Baptist Church during that time. But they stuck together now. They were two great leaders.
1928, Dr. Norris led a campaign to build the first brick elementary school for black children.
That's right.
In the Northern Neck. You did go to Morgan E. Norris as a youngster.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I used to walk. We lived during that time. You know where Crosby's place is?
Yes.
We lived right in that area. We used to call the children up on Old St. John Hill. We used to walk. We didn't have no bus rides. We used to walk from that area up to Morgan E. Norris as youngsters. And then when my parents moved to Whitestone, that's when I went to A.T. Wright.
And they say in 1939, Dr. Norris spearheaded a boycott to secure free bus transportation for black children.
Black children, that's right.
And led the Northern Neck Progressive Association annual fair from 1927 until 1957. But he tried to get buses also.
Right.
See, these are the things that we don't get to hear much about.
Yeah, Dr. Norris and Dr. Chamberlain, they were great leaders in the Northern Neck, along with Mr. Wright, E.T. Wright. I was principal at Morgan E. Norris, and then from Morgan E. Norris to Brookvale.
I didn't know that.
Then at New Life as classroom teacher, and then I was moved up from New Lancaster to Morgan E. Norris as a teaching principal. I had the seventh grade, and plus I was a principal.
The other part about being segregated, where Brookvale, 1969,
right,
won the state championship.
That's right.
But you didn't get the recognition.
No, not until, what was it, 50 years later?
Yes, until 50 years later. So here is 50 years later, and 50 years is a long time to go before you recognize such an achievement. You are the principal of the school. And from all that I had read, there is not a person from Brookvale that does not hold you up high because of the inspiration, not only you, the principal, but the coaches and the assistant coaches that coach these men to make this achievement.
Right. That's right.
I just trying to understand, you know, what you must have felt and how did you keep the motivation of the people from 1969 up until when you left the
always whatever came up in the line of education that I could attend. That's the classes, or business classes, or whatnot. Any education, I would always make myself available to attend, you know, those classes and things. And by so doing, I was able to find out what others were doing. That was not only for Lancaster and Northumberland, but that was for the state of Virginia.
I'm going to read what you said.
Go ahead.
Our practical goals are derived from the understanding that democracy gains strength from well-informed citizenry.
Right, right.
And is in serious peril when confronted with ignorance. You think that's hold true right now?
Oh, yeah. course, now I'm retired. but I still try to keep up with what's going on in education and other areas, too, the Masonic areas also.
What is your earliest experience of racism?
When I was a child, I was down in the elementary school then. The only job that children, well, I said that black children, were able to get, like, the picking tomatoes, and I used to cut grass for some of the people, the white folk, cut the grass, lawn trimming, I guess you would call it, things like that.
Only job you could get because you were black?
Well, at my age, and yeah, because of black, the Saunderses, you know, helped with house cleaning and things like that. But there was no outstanding job that a kid, that a youngster could get during that time. Mm-hmm.
What did you used to do for fun? Where did you go?
We used to play ball. That was a big deal. Mm. And the balls that we used for, or tennis balls that we used to use to play on, especially on a Sunday afternoon after church.
Where did y'all get the tennis balls from?
We'd save our money and buy them.
The men in the neighborhood, they used to play baseball. When we used to have May Days, after the May Days, the men would play baseball, and they would
right.
go
That's
to...
Right, we used to always look forward to May Day.
That was always fun. Mm-hmm. Well, when you were growing up, where did y'all used to go to have fun, to take your girlfriends out, as they used to call it, coating?
That's Wiggins Beach. It was Wiggins Beach then. Of course, then it became Church Hill Beach, you know, down the road then.
Yeah, I remember.
We used to go to Wiggins Beach, and then there was Simon Conquest, that little place there. Right across from Doc North. We used to go to Simon's, Wiggins Beach, and then up the road further, Miss Holcomb. She had a place we used to, you could go and sit there, talk to your girlfriend, and treat us to something. That was, I forget what Holcomb's place was called.
Is that Rice's?
No, Rice's came after, yeah. I can't even think of the name of it now. But we used to go there. I should remember, because Miss Holcomb, when I went to Brookville, while I was at Brookville, I should say, Miss Holcomb became the lady who used to run the place, was one of my cooks at Brookville.
What led you to be an educator?
Well, I think the military may have had. So I was drafted in the United States Army before I finished high school. And when I came back out of high school, I went back to A.T. Wright and got my diploma. And I had some friends who were at Virginia Union, Virginia State, and talked with those fellows and girls. And then I decided I was going on into, a higher ed anyway. And I went on off to college from there. And, of course, after I got in college, I found many avenues and came in contact with many people who had different vocations and whatnot. And that's one of the things that led me. Of course, when I was a child, I used to always think in terms of going into medicine. Dr. Norris was one of the individuals that I looked up to for going to the medical field. But I didn't have the money after that. Even after going in the military, I didn't have the money for medical, you know, to go to med school. So I went to graduate, undergrad, and then graduate, and then postgraduate.
So you just helped me to come to one of the questions I want to ask. What person or people motivated you as you was growing up?
Doc North, Dr. Chamberlain.
What did they do to motivate you?
You know, just looking at the profession that they were in. Like Doc North was a medical doctor, and that was a great profession as, most of us kids coming along thought. Dr. Chamberlain was a minister. So those were the things that kind of inspired me. And then when I went off to college, when I left home to go to college, I was thinking about something else and got to Richmond. And then there were some fellows from Northumberland, the Coopers, Fred and Bill Cooper. And, of course, they were at Virginia Union. And they persuaded me, instead of going to Virginia State, to come to Union. And so I went on to Virginia Union, just been from Virginia Union. When I graduated after that to Hampton, got the master's in school administration. And then the final degree was from the college of, not the college either, from the university in Lynchburg.
Who was your favorite teacher while you was going to school?
Well, I had several, but one that I had most, I guess, was E.A. Carroll. He taught math. And of course, Mr. Wright.
What did Mr. Wright teach you?
Social studies. History. We call it social studies there. You could call it history.
What made them your favorite teachers?
Oh, no, just, I guess, the way they, the control they had on students. You know, you wouldn't dare to act up. And Ms. Taylor, too, Vi Taylor. You wouldn't dare to act up, you know, around those teachers.
I have a friend of yours that said, I have something that he said about you, that you was his principal from the first grade to the 10th grade.
Yeah?
Yeah, Moselle Carter.
Oh, yeah, Moselle.
And his brother, his twin,
yeah.
Wardell,
they
love Mr. Smith. Well, all of us love you, Moselle said. You was one of the role models that had made a major impact on his life.
Yeah, Moselle and Wardell.
Yeah, they both played on that 1969 championship team
right,
too.
That's right. And yeah. That was something else, too. I could fill the car up as much as it could and get it in as good and take the fellow's places.
Take them where?
You know, to games and whatnot. Carol Sin, do you remember him?
Yes, I do.
He was one that stuck behind me all the time.
What's your favorite food?
I tell you, when I was coming along, I used to love beans and tomatoes, ham, bean, and tomatoes. I still love beans and tomatoes and chicken.
What about crabs?
I didn't care too much. Yeah, in the later years, crabs and lobster. But I didn't care too much for them when I was, you know, a young fish. Yeah, especially the toadfish.
Yeah, the sugar toads. I was about to ask you, do you like the sugar toads and spots?
Yeah, and spots, yeah.
Oysters?
Oh, yeah. That's good.
Living on the Northern Neck, you know, eating is just as much a part as breathing. And having fresh vegetables and
right.
People preserving and when people used to kill the hogs and you know that you was going to be getting, you know, fresh sausages.
Well, say you knew you were going to get chitlins, beef, and sausage.
Yeah, you knew you was going to get it.
Right.
And some of that stuff, you know, is like, oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah.
We leave the Northern Neck, but we really
right.
don't. You know, we are always drawn back to being part of the Northern Neck. It's something about living there. That you
good
just,
old Northern Neck.
Yeah, you know, as soon as I come across that bridge, it's just like the care.
It's like a new day.
It's like a new day. You are listening to an interview with Dr. Elton Smith, the last principal for the last black high school in Lancaster County, Virginia. He became the first black superintendent for the Commonwealth of Virginia. With the present atmosphere here in 2021, we just went through a really major, major time in our lives where we have the virus that's keeping us isolated.
Oh, right, right.
We have division politically and socially and racially. What is it that you would want young people and young adults and just the people of the Northern Neck, what would you want to do to get through all of this?
Well, I would like to see blacks involved more in some of the business activities. You know, in the Neck, not only Lancaster County, but throughout, become involved. And also, of course, we have, from the early days, we do have a lot who are engaged in politics or in the political life, but still there's room for more.
What businesses do you think that we need the most? Or what is the pull to keep young people involved and engaged?
I think that more educational opportunities should be presented for young people to give them something else to do, or to give them things to do. And then I think young folk, those who can, could have a business, go into business, provide, which could hire those who are qualified. Yeah.
The more I talk to people, you know, and there's names that keep coming in the conversations, uh-huh. You know, similar names, and your name is always one that comes up. Oh, yes, Dr. Smith, you are very loved. You are very loved. And that's...
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
You're very loved. All the black schools, they either are being torn down.
Right, you're right.
Or they're being...
Renamed,
like it's trying to erase our history.
Mm-hmm.
It's a shame that we have to somehow fight just to keep alive.
That's right.
They can tear the buildings down, but they can't tear the memories away.
Not at all. No. Like you said, Mr. Wright been gone for years and years, but that name still floats.
Mount Jean,
right.
Oh, Mount Jean's, what is that name after? What does Mount Jean's mean?
I was reading something not too long ago about a fund that was started and was called the Jean Fund. And they named schools. Did they name one in Lancaster? I have to look and see if I can find it. But I know they had one of the schools in Northumberland, two of the schools in Northumberland that came under the Jean Fund.
Okay.
Rosenwald was one, and then the school where I started was another one.
It's 1973, you was appointed the first black superintendent.
I had a friend of mine who lived up in Caroline County, and so, but he had an office in Richmond, and he told me, he said he was coming down the road, coming to the work, and that news came over about me being appointed. He said he pulled a car off to the side of the road and got off and did a damn. And then when he got to his office, he called me and told me about it.
From Raymond Brand to you. That's just like being fed castor oil and then you get butter pecan ice cream. You the butter pecan ice cream. Woo. Mr. Brand was not.
He was something else.
He was majorly something else.
Yes, sir.
Golly.
Well, Ms. Taylor said, told me when he said, but the sun coming up every morning at 6 o'clock, she said, if I'd had a pan or something, I would have hit him in the ear.
Man,
yeah.
I remember when Ms. Cheatham Taylor and Mr. Brand would come to the schools.
And
he would be, he was so ugly. He was so ugly, even as little kids. We knew about, you know, colored and white, going to the separate water fountains and the to the doctor's office. And but there was just something evil about that man.
The R.E. Brand.
To see people that you were afraid of, like I was afraid of Miss Cheatham Taylor. I was deadly afraid of her. But to see her actually cow in front of him.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I was kind of crushed because I guess I wanted to stay afraid of her. But he had that power, and he just took away respect that I had from her, even though it was a fearful respect.
I tell you, that was when I was principal at when they changed schools, when they integrated Mantua, where I was principal, Brookvale, where I was principal, became Mantua under the integration. And, of course, Brand was the superintendent. He was superintendent of Lancaster and Northumberland. And I used to be on him about we didn't have this and we didn't have that. And he told me, he said, let me tell you something, Mr. Smith. I said, what is that, Mr. Grant? He said, this is going to be your problem. I said, what do you mean going to be my problem? He said, because I'm going to retire and I'm not going to fool with this immigration stuff. And he did just that. I said, okay, Mr. Brand, you can retire. Somebody else will take the job and move it on.
As a kid, when I heard that, I thought that they had said that he had committed suicide. I'm like, oh, my God. But I think that, you know, they were just, you know, using it in another term. And
term,
I was thinking as a kid, like, this white man would rather die than letting a white kid sit beside a black kid or a black kid sit beside a white kid.
Yeah,
he would rather kill himself. And I'm
he told me point blank, and he said, I'm going to buy myself a van, and my wife and I, we're going to ride, we're going to travel through the country. I said, enjoy yourself.
Go ahead, Dr.
Boy, it's good to hear your voice.
I was always so good talking to you, Dr. Smith. Always. Always, always.
Okay, we'll stay in touch.
Okay, then. You take care now.
Okay, then. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Right.
All right. Bye-bye. Dr. Smith mentioned the Jeans Foundation, also known as the Negro Rural School Fund or Jeans Fund, which helped support educational and vocational programs for blacks in rural communities from 1908 to the 1960s with the assistance of Booker T. Washington and its founder, Quaker Anna T. Jeans, in 1907. Mr. Washington of Tuskegee Institute and Hollis B. Frissell, principal of the Hampton Institute, united their efforts with Ms. Anna T. Jeans for funding education for Black Americans. February 2022, I interview Mary Jackson, board president of the Julia Rosenwald Schools Foundation, Northumberland County, about the preservation of Black schools established in the rural segregated Commonwealth.
Mary Brooks Jackson. I am retired. I retired from the Mayor's Office of Employment Development as a senior contract specialist supervisor. Upon retiring, I received several awards, one from the Mayor's Office of Employment Development, one from Senator Gladden, the state senator, one from the Mayor's Office, one from the City Council. And what my citation reflected was dedicated service in the community for the years and actually outstanding service to the citizens of Baltimore City. I attended Howard University for 2 years. At that time, I did not return because I was given an opportunity for a great job opportunity with Martin Marietta Corporation in Maryland. I did studies at the University of Baltimore in Hopkins in Business Administration. The job opportunity that I had with Martin Marietta was one that had me cleared for a top secret clearance, and I was the first Black female hired with administrative duties with Martin Marietta here in Maryland. What I've been doing since I retired, I started to work with Julius Rosenwald Foundation of Northumberland County, Inc., as well as I do a lot of work with my church. I want to give credit to Reverend T.W. Morris, former pastor of Shiloh Baptist Church. Reverend Morris was very interested in doing something with the Rosenwald School. When the school closed in 1958, the county took possession of the school. They later sold the school at an auction to a white family who was the Slaughter family. And Reverend Morris, because he knew the history of the Rosenwald School, he wanted to obtain ownership of that school to try to renovate it because it was historical. He entered into negotiations with the Flora family, and that had been ongoing for some years. And he formed a group that was called the Tribute Fund. In 2003, they had their first reunion at Shiloh. Students who had graduated from Rosenwald and the majority of the people who attended actually had been members of Shiloh. He had this every 2 years, 2003, 2005, and I believe 2007 may have been the last one. He started up this group, and they met on a monthly basis, I believe, and they were meeting at the library in Hicksville. At one of the meetings, I found out about the meetings, and I attended one of the meetings, follow up another time, I attended another meeting, and we were going around of how we could get enough money to purchase the school. It was around $40,000 that we would need to purchase the school. He continued his negotiations with the Slaughter family, and Mr. Slaughter had passed, so the property passed on to his children. He had two daughters. One was married to Tom Kelly and Jude Kelly and her sister, Betty Nichols. Reverend Morris continued those negotiations, and we then decided, well, maybe we should form a nonprofit organization. So we made application for the nonprofit, was approved, we got that, and continued negotiating with the Slaughters. And at a point in 2014, they decided that they would donate the school to the foundation for the sole purpose of renovating the school and making it a community center for the community. And that did not mean that it was just for blacks. It would be for the community, as well as having a museum in the building to reflect some of the black history. They donated the school to the foundation, and after that we began to try to get funds. We had, I believe it was three events where we had the dinner and had speakers. They were quite successful. But when you're talking about a project the size of what we are facing, that was just a drop in the bucket. And that has been part of our problem, that we have only relied on donations and events where we could pull in funds. The foundation's sole purpose is to renovate the Rosenwald School, make it into a community center, and designate one particular room of that school to reflect the black history in the community. We have an architect who has designed the renovation of the school. The building is still in fairly good condition compared to other Rosenwald schools that are still standing around the country. And right now we're trying to get the school registered on the National Register, where we would be able to have access of funds from the National Park Service.
And give me a little background about Rosenwald Schools.
Julius Rosenwald was the CEO of Sears Roebuck. And at a meeting in Chicago, well, and he actually, I believe it was 1912, that he and Booker T. Washington met up in Chicago at some meeting. And at that meeting, Booker T. Washington asked Rosenwald if he could get a loan to build some schools in Alabama and schoolhouses for teachers. Rosenwald gave him the loan, and that's how it all started. And Rosenwald then realized the plight of black students. So he donated money to 5,300 schools throughout the South. And what he said is that he would match, if the community would come up with funds, then he would do a match to whatever they came up with. And that's how these schools developed throughout the South. There were 5,300 of them. Now, as of today, I believe there's only like 316, I believe, left standing, because when the schools became integrated, then the buildings, they just, no one bothered, and they just deteriorated. Now, the Julius Rosenwald High School is one of seven two-story schools that were built. The majority of the schools were just one-story, 1 to 2 rooms. Some of the states had maybe up to 4 rooms. But in Northumberland County, there were 5 Rosenwald schools, if I remember correct. Avalon, Annette Jean, Julius Rosenwald, Branch Apple, and I think I'm missing one.
Hygina?
Yes, yes. But there were 5 in Northumberland County alone. But out of the 5, Julius Rosenwald is the only two-story school. The others are only one. And Avalon is the larger of the one-story. Branch Chapel was 2 rooms. We are now making application to be put on the National Register of Historic Places. And if that is approved, then we will have access to federal funds. And that hopefully will be our saving grace. We have the support of Congressman Whitman. There were prior to the former president leaving office, he introduced a bill for the Rosenwald schools, which would mean that Park Services would make funds available for the renovation of schools, certain schools. There were 14 that were put on the list. So if this bill is finalized, then I'm sure that it's going to cover all of the Rosenwald schools that's left standing. I sent a letter to Congressman Whitman asking him for his support and if he would be an advocate for the Julius Rosenwald School being put on that list. He, in fact, did write a letter to the Department of Interior asking them to make sure that this school was put on the list of schools that they were going to look at. So we're hopeful that that will take place, but that's a 2 to 3 year process before all of this is finalized. So in the meantime, we are still trying to get funds through grants. That's the biggest chunk of money that we would be able to get is through the grants. We have gotten quite a few donations over the years, and most of those donations have come from former graduates of the school. We haven't really gotten monies from businesses in the area, but we have gotten in-kind contributions from several of the businesses.
If the public wanted to help, how could they go about helping?
Well, the public can help through donations. They can help by becoming volunteers with the foundation. We need volunteers. And one of our biggest challenges right now is finding a grant writer. We have attempted to find a grant writer because there are grants out there that we are eligible for and we could apply for. But we have to have someone who is proficient in writing grants. And I have reached out on Facebook for a grant writer with no response. And to be honest, we seem to have more difficulty pulling in the black community than the white. We have many from the white community who have reached out to us to help. But for whatever reason, we cannot get the black community involved at the level that we think they should be involved.
Why do you think that is a problem?
That is a $64,000 question twofold. We have been trying to figure that out. We just don't understand it. I mean, even though some of the younger generation, they didn't experience what we experienced when we were attending that school. It was the only black high school in Northumberland County. People from my end of the county, we traveled over 32 miles one way every day to get to the school, 32 miles to get back home every single day. True, some of the younger didn't have that experience. We passed Heathsville High School. There was a school in Calio, which was 4 miles from my house, that I could not attend. So we have been tossing this question around and around. Why? Why? Okay, some of the younger people and even the older ones. Why is it that you have no interest in preserving this school? Do you realize what your forefathers had to go through in order to build this? This school was built by the black community. The black men built this school. They sold chicken dinners, fish dinners. I understand that those who were working took some of their pay because they wanted a better education for their children. When this school was built, the black community, the school cost $11,000, almost $12,000 to build. Back in 1917 is when it was built. But the majority of that money, over $8,000, came from the black community, and that money came from money that they scraped, did without, to build that school because they wanted a better education for their children. And why the community, the black community, cannot embrace that, I have no idea. We just don't have an answer. I don't know if it's because they don't realize the importance of these schools. We just don't know. I wish someone could tell us. For the size of the community, and when I say community, I'm talking about Northumberland County. We don't have the support that we need, and I cannot tell you why.
So how can people contact the foundation to assist?
They can contact to our website, jrsfnc.org, and put the information in, and we will respond to them. Or they could call 410-598-5748.
And that is reaching you?
Yes.
I thank you for your passion. I thank you for your response, and I am hopeful this interview will help.
I pray so. The people who are in the foundation at the present time, all of us except for one live out of town. Before the pandemic, we were having meetings once a month, every fourth Saturday of the month. Each of us traveled from wherever we are living to Virginia for that meeting. We have one person who lives in West Virginia, travel every month to that meeting. But yet we cannot get the people in the area to join us for the meeting. Now, some of the whites have. We have white board members, but we can't get the blacks joined. We've been fortunate enough to have the support from the Haney family in helping us when we had to remove the hay from the building, because when the Slaughter family bought the building and it was over 7 acres, they then used it for storing hay. And we think that that had helped to secure the building as far as deteriorating, because if you walk in that building, you would not believe that it's over 100 years old. Well, now it's close to 105 years old. Floors are intact except for one room. There are a couple of boards that's missing. But the auditorium, blackboard, everything. We had visitors from Preservation of Virginia, and they were amazed at how well that building looked compared to other buildings around the country that are still standing. And if there's anyone out there who is a grant writer or knows someone who's a grant writer, I would appreciate if they would contact us and could contact me, because that is something that we definitely need, because this is all contingent upon getting money. And the grants are the biggest lots of money that's out. That's where I just completed a letter of intent to National Trust. There's a $150,000 grant that's going to become available. Prior to that, we had to do a letter of intent. I sent that off hopefully they will accept it, but then we have to make application for the grant, which in April, I think, when the grant has to be submitted. Someone out there is a grant writer and they think they can help us. I would encourage them and would appreciate if they would please give us a call. They can go to the website or they can either call the number I gave you. And I hope that it gives some insight on what the foundation is about and what our tip is reference to this school. It's not for the foundation. It's not for the foundation. It's for the community and what our forefathers had to go through in order to build that school.
The teachers of those now empty or discarded black schools in Lancaster County, A.T. Wright, Morgan E. Norris, Mount Jeans, Brookvale, they live within us. The strength and conviction, the fortitude and courage to ensure each child had a chance for the right to be fully educated and to aspire to go as far as you were able is still a living legacy. Black educators knew the future would be hard because of being black on the Northern Neck. Visit the JRSFNC.org website to see how you can support the preservations of Rosenwald Schools. Visit southerneducation.org and view the timeline of black education across the nation. The music by Robert A. Hall. This interview is dedicated to the graduates of A.T. Wright High School and Brookvale High School of Lancaster County, and the graduates of Julius Rosenwald High School and Central High School of Northumberland County. Thank you for listening.